Bigfoot, Skunk Ape, Grassman, Sasquatch. Just a few of the names given to the primate-like creature said to roam the woods and remote areas of North America. Tales of this elusive being go back for hundreds of years. Is it mere myth and legend? Or is there truly something more tangible to this phenomenon? Join us on this journey as we discuss the science behind the encounters, the research and the evidence, keeping you updated on the latest findings, ideas, and hypotheses. Arrogance gets us nowhere, and closing one's eyes doesn't make things disappear, nor less real. Today's myth could be tomorrow's reality. It's time to make this subject matter less taboo. Welcome to Monster X Radio. Bigfoot without the BS. Hello and welcome to Monster X Radio. We have a really great show lined up for you and a wonderful guest that's here in Washington State, all the way from London, England. He's a good friend of mine. His name is Bobby O. Many of you know him as Squatch Metrics. Squatch Metrics is, of course, your Sasquatch research data solution. Now, before we get started, I want to emphasize the importance of checking out Squatch Metrics on Facebook and or Instagram during or after you've listened to this episode. During this episode, Bobby O will be sharing and discussing some of his data and numbers that will not necessarily stick with you, nor will it have the same effect unless you take the time to check out the visual representations of this data that you can find on Squatch Metrics' Facebook and Instagram sites. And while you're checking out Squatch Metrics on Facebook, give it a like. Now, let's get to the show. Hey, Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hi, Shane. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, mate. It's a pleasure having you on the show. We've talked about having you on in the past with Squatch Metrics because of distance and time and work and jobs and all of that. I know it's difficult, but, and of course, you know, when talking about distance, you're across the pond there in England. We got you stateside.
I'm here. Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here, though, so it's all good.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure, Bobby. Well, Bobby, for the audience, for the Monster X listeners and fans, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background?
Yeah. The relevant part of my background where Squatchometrics are concerned is gaining some soccer coaching qualifications back maybe 14, 15 years ago now in the US, funny enough. And then gradually making the transition over to performance analysis. And I was fortunate enough to work for a professional club in the UK when I did move back to London. And it kind of opened my eyes to a world full of objectivity rather than, you know, just general cliche and commentary bias that we normally listen to as sports fans or anyone that works in the sports industry. It was not life-changing moment, but it was great that the objectivity put a completely new view on not just the game and my profession with what I was doing, but for life itself. So the aim from there on, a kind of spark went off because my interest in Sasquatch was high at that time. And I saw an angle to maybe translate what I was doing work-wise into this subject. And you know, the rest is history, as they say, you know.
The rest is history. Well, yes and no. Obviously, you launched into this amazing endeavor of Squatch Metrics, as I see it. But before we get it delve into Squatch Metrics, some of the numbers and some of the questions that were posed to you via social media and whatnot, what exactly got you into the Sasquatch subject? What brought you into this phenomena?
Yeah, so, okay. I was born and raised in London. London is a concrete jungle, you know. We don't see trees until we're maybe 12 year old if we're lucky, you know. Right. So Sasquatch and, you know, Bigfoot is absolutely wasn't in my psyche. It wasn't in my culture. It was nowhere. As a family, we used to, with my dad and his partner at the time, we used to vacation in Florida. We went there maybe 3 or 4 years when we was from the age of around 12 to 15. And as a family, we used to play a game. When we used to travel across the Everglades, and, you know, anyone who's aware of Florida knows that any fresh water, body of fresh water, can contain alligators.
Right.
And we used to play a game called Spot the Gator. And we literally used to drive along, and wherever there was a water surface, there's the possibility of seeing a gator head, you know. And we did used to see them. They're regular. They're everywhere, but they're certainly popular.
They're not scarce.
Common in Florida, yeah. And one day we was driving across what is, I'm not sure the actual route name, but its nickname is Alligator Alley. It's a road that I believe, if I remember right, it goes from like Fort Lauderdale across to Naples on the Gulf Coast side.
Okay.
And we was driving across that, and we had been playing Spot the Gator all morning, and we were seeing gators, and we stopped at a rest area for, you know, I think Dad was going to use the restroom. They were going to top up on water, etc. And I didn't need to go to the restroom. I remember we parked in, it was a huge car park. And it was one of those car parks where even, you know, you feel that even if it was the height of the tourist season, would never be filled. It was so big. So I didn't go to the restroom. And so Dad went to the restroom, his partner and her son who was with us. And I said, right, I'm going to go and look for gators, because the border of the car park area was just swampland. And there was a huge fence up part of it, and it was not very well maintained, and then the fence disappeared. I don't know if it fell over or just wasn't very well maintained. And I walked up the end of the car park, and my eyes were down towards where the water was. Again, that the intention was to spot a gator, and so the attention was fixed low down, the eyes were fixed low down on the water, even though it's a weird situation. It was a swampy area. There was breaks of water, but then it was just swampy marshland. And so I continued walking up the car park, and for some reason, whatever it was, looked up and saw this big, I don't really know how to describe it, you know, it was just a big hairy mass. I think that can be the best way of describing it, you know, a big hairy mass with a huge chest, completely unobstructed view.
Daytime, obviously.
Daytime, unobstructed. It couldn't have been anything else other than something that I'd never seen before in my life, that was in no zoo, that was on no nature program. Huge head, just looked at me, kept looking at me, kind of swayed a little, but not overly so, you know, not like you. I've read a hell of a lot of reports, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And it wasn't huge swaying, but it was rocking. It was kind of going sideways, and this kind of went on for what seemed like an eternity. It was at least, you know, it was anywhere between a half a minute and a minute. Never, ever was scared of it. Never showed any fear whatsoever. There was no odor. There was no noises. It was just an incredibly strange situation from a young teenage boy from London.
And, right. So Bobby, real quick, you saw what you saw. What, you know, roughly, I know you were a teenager, but roughly, what was the height of this hairy mass?
You know, there's nothing definitive. I can't tell you how high it was. What I will say is that at that time, my dad was a big man, still is a big man. I guess 6'3", 6'4", weighing maybe in between 280 and 300 pounds. So type of size, I was seeing daily, obviously, and that's a big guy. You
it's
know?
A big
that
guy,
a
yeah.
Big guy. But what I took from the sighting was that what I was looking at was bigger. The chest was bigger than what Dad's was, much bigger. And it just seemed all round to be a bigger figure, animal, or whatever you want to call it. I should say that I didn't see the legs. I never ever saw any legs because it was kind of covered by a by shrubbery, by a bush or whatever right. it is that they have down in Florida, you know. So I couldn't tell you if it was standing knee deep in water or if it was standing not in the water or what. I didn't see that bit, or at least I didn't take away in my memory.
Yeah. Down in Florida, the Sasquatch down there known mm-hmm. as the skunk ape. That's mm-hmm. generally what they're called. But did it look similar to, say, Patty from the Patterson-Gimlin film?
I mean, I've seen that there are pictures when I not started researching, but when I started to look into the subject online, and I guess one of the first ports of call is how many good pictures there are out there for anyone, you know. So I went through a ton of pictures, and there is that, I think they call it Palmetto skunk ape picture,
yeah,
which looks like an oversized orangutan. Yeah, this wasn't that. Absolutely wasn't that. It was kind of, it was browny, you know, a dark browny, like chestnut kind of color, possibly, but was far more like the Patterson-Gimlin film than that orangutan type animal right. that, if that is real, that they've got in that picture, that's for sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. It seemed a completely different animal to that. Much more similar to the PGF.
Okay.
Yeah, so I walked back to the car after that, extremely confused, and never spoke to a soul that day, never said to anyone. I wasn't interested in the ridicule that I felt was going to come my way, you know. That didn't infuse me at all. So I didn't say anything to anyone that day, and I didn't for like 12 years afterwards, yeah. You know, 12 to 15 years afterwards. And an incredible day that, you know, it stays with me. It has stayed with me for a long time. I did think about the sighting. I wouldn't say I didn't think about it because I did, but I wasn't obsessed by what I saw at that stage. You know, I was around about 14, 15 years of age, and any man on this planet will look back on that part of our lives, and we have very different things to think about than what we saw in a bush on vacation, you know. So so no, I was nowhere near obsessed with the sighting. I did go out to the US. My dad moved to the US in 2001/2002 when I was around about 21, 22 years of age. And in my bedroom, Dad put in a computer. We had an AOL dial-up internet connection, which was, you know, it used to take a while to connect. But, you know, as I started exploring the internet more, I did decide to look into what I saw that day down in Florida. And, you know, being in the US at that time, there was far more TV shows on the subject than what we got in the UK. And it was a much more popular subject. And I looked into the internet side of it. And I think I must have put in like Florida monkey or into the search engine, into Google or Yahoo or whatever it was. And up popped the BFRO. And up popped Sasquatch, and I never ever put the two together. There was no part of me that even figured what I saw that day was what is known as a Bigfoot, or what is known as, I now know as a Sasquatch. So went through the BFRO sightings, looked at Florida, you know, the geographical mm-hmm. sections on there. And then kind of went, wow, that's what I saw, you know. And ever since then, that's when the obsession comes. You know, you just want to learn more about what you saw, and yeah, so that was it. A day that stayed with me forever, but unfortunately, kind of not losing the memory of it, but you know, it's fading a little.
Of course,
which is a shame.
But it sets you on this path, you know. Obviously, yeah. you're a busy guy. You know, you do have a family, you got a day job. Mm-hmm. So you're not a field researcher,
no.
Bobby. No. But what you've created with Squatch Metrics, I'd like to get into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Did you wake up one day and go, you know, I'm gonna do data on Sasquatch? What happened there?
What happened in the immediate years after finally putting the two and two together and realizing what it was that I saw? I joined a forum, the bigfootforums.com, and you know, we're talking what, maybe 18 years ago now, 17, yeah. 18, a long, long time. Yeah, join the forum, join the bigfootforums.com. Again, just to extend my knowledge base on what I saw. That was the main objective. And one day, the forum was split into different areas, you know, like most forums are, general discussion, research, sightings, etc., just as you can imagine the subject is. And one day up popped a thread, and it was called the paper chase. And one of the things about the big databases that were out there at that time, and maybe even still to this date, is that a lot of them are wonderful. They're fantastic databases with fantastic reports, but there was no ability to split one report from the next one. They were just literally bunched together geographically, but you could never see the reports from the winter or the reports from the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no ability to do that. And there was a guy that I'm not even sure if he still utilizes the forum, but he made a thread called the Paper Chase. And what he decided to do was go through one of the biggest databases that there is publicly online. And he subdivided what he felt. I think his geographical interest, if I remember right, was the Southeast.
Okay.
And the Southern states. I may be wrong, but from memory, that's what it was. And he subdivided the reports and broke them down. And at that time, I was kind of just finding my way in my transition in my professional side of things, and it coincided with what the guy was doing, and that was of a huge interest to me, and I really liked what he was doing, and followed the thread for a few years. And there was a lot of guys and girls that were giving their kind of input into it in a really positive manner. And then we kind of, there was three or four of us that decided to build a database where that could benefit the whole community by subdividing reports in a manner that wasn't publicly available at that time. That was the long and short of it. And, you know, kind of, you know, now we're sitting in 2020 with 7,000 plus reports in the database, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's the database itself is, in my opinion, the best data research centralized system that we've got in this community. It really is, certainly publicly anyway.
You absolutely
know, I don't know what happens behind closed doors for many, right.
If it's not public, you know, it's non-shareable. So
yeah, and that's what, we don't hide any of our data that we share. You know, sharing is caring, as far as I'm concerned. You know, if we can help one person out with an encounter, then we're doing something right somewhere along the line, you know, in the data that we share. So
what's interesting, getting back to the Bigfoot forums, that, you know, hopefully you're paying attention, but this is pre Facebook and all that stuff.
Yeah,
can you imagine, sure, Bobby, what would you have done if you never got involved with the forums? Can you imagine that? The forums played a huge part, I think.
Huge part. Yeah. I used to, you know, I was young then, early 20s, you know, mid 20s. And I had an opinion that kind of differed from absolutely everyone, you know, which got me in trouble a lot of the times, even on the forum.
Scolded, you were.
Yeah, scolded. I'm sorry. Yeah, I may have even got a ban or two, but, you know, yeah, no, but without the forums, I don't think I'd be sitting here now, Shane, that's for sure. And I don't think we'd have the ability that we've got with the database if it wasn't for the forum. It's important, very important.
You and these individuals that kind of, you guys met through the forums and whatnot, and you start getting, and geographically speaking, you guys live in different areas. And of course,
East Coast, Southern US, me mainly, or London, certainly for the last 10 years. But yeah.
You know, when I first met you, Bobby, over social media, I didn't realize that you weren't stateside, and we got to talking, and it worked out really well, obviously, but your high interests are your geographical area is mainly Pacific Northwest, and some of these other blokes, these other guys, you know, it's different geographical ranges in North America.
Yeah. There's no other reason than I perceived that most of the data would come from the Pacific Northwest, but I was wrong on that. But I perceived that, I'll take the Pacific Northwest because that's where we're going to have the most data, and you know, potentially the most interesting findings, but you know, that's not the case now, you know.
Right. You start Squatch Metrics. What was the reception from the folk? Could you just post it on Facebook? Where did you post that first? Or share some of that data, other than with your guys that you were working with, these individuals?
I did share on the forums initially. You know, I did do a couple of personal projects in its early days, and then kind of figured that base or a platform was needed, and even some branding. And I'm quite loath to use that word, but that kind of
it's a necessity.
Yeah. I felt that if we could brand something and give it a personalized platform, that we could be received better.
Yeah, face.
Yeah. So decided to go down that road of branding Squatchometrics and usage of the word. The word was quite easy for me to choose. The name was quite easy to choose because the word Squatcher was getting used within a certain TV show at that time. And the metrics was a, you know, a word that we would use every other minute at work, you know. So it was just a case of putting the two together. So going back to what you asked before, I initially shared personally on the forums, and then when I did do I used the quote marks, the rebrand, just the normals, made the social media accounts, made the Facebook. There was a Twitter account in the early stages that maybe I'm wrong too, that I've kind of ignored in the last few years, and that I maybe will get back up running again. And also we've got an Instagram account now, which we share, which coincides with the Facebook account. So,
right. Hand in hand.
Good feedback on all. No complaints at all, but that's the best way. Social media now is a monster in its own right. Right. So that's the way that we've decided to distribute.
You're following through with Squatch Metrics. How do you come across your data? I mean, where does it formulate from, and how does that all work? I'm sure the audience is kind of curious, you know, where do you get your reports from?
Yeah.
And then I want to get this across to people. You're strictly putting in the numbers and looking at them. There's no fidgeting of the numbers.
No. Every public database that is out there that we can backlink to, so we can always go back to the origins of the report.
Yeah, that's important.
And we do that in the system as well. In the database, we do actually put the backlink manually in there. We utilize that report. I also like the idea of reports in books, because a lot of the time they have been investigated thoroughly, and that's important. But from a report perspective, yeah, every database that is out there public has the potential to have the report inside our database. The beauty of it is that at the click, literally the click of a button, the database, thanks to some immense brains behind the gentleman that built it, then kicks back the most awesome data imaginable. So you know, I do this as a hobby, Shane, and I would love to devote more time to it. I absolutely would, but circumstances dictate that I can't. So if I didn't have the ability to click that button and that database kick back and feed me the data it does in the form it does, then things would become much more difficult, and I wouldn't, you know, share the data that I do. But again, thankfully, the database itself kicks back and it gives us back an enormous amount of invaluable data that I can read quite easily due to my day job. Mm-hmm. We then go on to distribute it in a way that I hope and want to share with everyone where they can understand it. That's hugely important.
I got to ask you, Bobby, when you started seeing what the data was, what was coming out of this, did you have an aha moment?
Well, our perception, and I say our, I mean human, can be very different to what the reality of a situation is. And on a professional level now, and I'll just quickly revert back to my working life with the soccer, data holds such weight now, you know, because our eyes can deceive us, and our internal biases, they can deceive us, and they do deceive us every day. So I hold such weight with data now, you know, not 100%, not, you know, I'm open to the fact that data can be misleading as well. It can be. But I think a balancing act is needed. And was there a kind of a spark moment like you ask? No, honestly, there wasn't. But I did want to, something that I always had in my mind was, you know, if we're to, just for argument's sake, I know that there's different thought processes on this, but for me, this is a flesh and blood animal. As it's a flesh and blood animal, this animal would, no matter how intelligent it is, this animal would give a form of pattern somewhere, somehow to us. And I knew for a fact that as it would give a pattern somewhere, I didn't know where it would give the you know, where it would show patterns, but I knew that if I looked at this data long and hard enough, we would be able to get some good data back from it and a type of pattern, albeit whatever that is. So going back to the original question, there wasn't really a eureka moment, but there has been lots of instances over time with a lot of the stuff that I share, I think, on a personal level, is good data.
Yeah.
You know, going forward, we do have to organize much better. That's for sure. You know, we have to organize in a way where people can compare better, even ourselves on an internal level. But no, there was no eureka moment, Shane, unfortunately. But there's been a lot of instances since then that you look at, and you look at the data, you look at common sense, you look at various other wildlife behavior, and it does make sense, you know.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, almost patterns.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, for sure. Patterns and trends, you know. There is. I don't think we're actually going to go into data discussion right at this second, but yeah, there's lots of stuff in the past that I've shared that I'd like to think we receive good feedback on it. I'd like to think we'd open people's eyes as to a aha moment more than a eureka moment, you know. But
all right, Bobby, so when you share this stuff publicly on some of these social media sites, what do you want to see people get out of this? What's the main goal there?
Well, a form of education, a form of understanding of what we're dealing with, if possible. End goal would be great if we could get one person an encounter based on the data. Huh? That would be super cool. You know, we have had messages in the past that, you know, people have said, thank you for that. We have used your data and we got some vocalizations, which is cool. That makes me smile a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, that would be the end goal. But I do need to, like I just touched on just previously, I am very obsessive over our presentation. I really want to take that up a level. I really want people taking benefit from our presentation visually, which is incredibly important, because if we can get data visualized in a way that is really benefiting, then that could be worth its weight in gold going forward. The organization is a huge part of the next coming year as well, and hopefully go down the road of a website and a website that is easy to navigate. I'd like to be able to even utilize the usage of hashtags on the social media side of things. So, you know, I've just started hashtagging Squatchermetrics Magical Hour, you know, really simplistic, but if people use the Facebook search bar and was to put in those hashtags, you'd get all the posts that are relevant to whatever the hashtag may be, you know, and state specific hashtags and just organization on the whole. But going back to visualization, I think if we can, when we do up our game and take the visualization via charts, via maps, etc., to a different level, we hope that it will force us to notice what we never expected to see, Shane, without it. You know, that's hugely important.
Yeah. Well, Squatchmetrics, I mean, it's a resource. To me, there's not a better resource out there, bar none. It's the best resource out there, and anybody can access it. You know, you don't have to pay a membership. The information is shared publicly. Yep. You know, I know you do cover the Pacific Northwest, but you do get into other geographical areas and share data there as well. And people reach out to you all the time, like you said.
From all over the continent, the North America, you know, Canada, the Southeast, the Southwest. 7,000 reports we're at now, in between 7,000 and 7,500 reports. And they range, you know, from South Florida, where I saw mine, up until the Alaskan interior. You know, it's a huge a huge body of data, that's for sure. But again, sorry to just rehash old ground, but going back to where you said about goals, and I know this is a term that Derek used and possibly still uses.
Yeah, Derek Randall's, yeah.
Yeah, but establishing predictability, that is ultimately what I do every day in work, and ultimately where we want to go with Squatch and Metrics for sure, because to be able to establish predictability will give us chances potentially beyond our wildest dreams, you know, if depending what our objectives are for this subject, to be able to establish predictability is a huge, huge benefit for people going forward, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Well, let's actually get into a little bit of the data. You put out a post, as did I, on, we are asking some of these individuals on social media, hey, I'm going to have a chance to have Bobby from Squatch Metrics in the studio here. What questions do you have for him? And we got quite a few. So let's start out with Matt from Utah. Matt on Monster X posed a question. In Utah, what is the most common moon phase correlated with reports? He asked the question, and I know you spent some time working on these questions, looking at the data. How do you answer Matt's question?
Yeah, well, Utah, we're currently at 64 reports for Utah. So that's not a huge number set, but it's enough to be able to draw some data from. We're split 50-50 down the middle from day and night sightings. From a moon phase perspective, the most common moon phase is the first quarter, which is at 35% of all of all sightings. When we add the next phase, which is the waxing gibbous, we then go up to 53%. So overall, the first quarter and the waxing gibbous, which are two consecutive moon phases, make up 53% of reports. So that would be the area that I would focus on there. Where visual reports are concerned, we're at 27, split fairly evenly at 53 to 47%, with both of those moon phases, again, jumping out at us. The first quarter makes up 38% of reports. And when adding that waxing gibbous, which again is a consecutive, it's the next moon phase, when adding that to the numbers, both of those moon phases make up 63% of reports. So those two moon phases would be what I would look at focusing on for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about moon phase here in a second, but just to reiterate something here, you know, you have these overall 64 reports from Utah. Those reports have been investigated. So what Squatch Metrics does not do, he does not take a phone call and someone said, hey, I had a sighting and that gets put in the database. It's not how it works. It has to have been investigated.
Absolutely.
I want to reiterate that.
We're not investigators.
So you're just sharing an investigated report.
Yes.
So it's been somewhat vetted at least, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's important. You know, we can't legislate for what the investigator does and how the investigator does his investigation, but they need to be investigated for sure and vetted in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
You know, and we rely on the investigator then to, and we rely on his or her judgment and to weed out the not so good reports, you know, for want of a better.
Exactly. Term. Obviously there's way more than 64 reports in Utah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But these are
these have come through that you can read online today at the various public databases that are out there.
Now, you got some really intriguing moon phase data here. Yeah. I know early on in the Bigfoot forums, that was a thing as well, that the moon phase. I used to go back and reread those forums because there was so much information in there.
Yeah.
Looking at the data over the years, let's just say you can do it geographically or if there was a moon phase, an absolute top moon phase.
Yeah.
I know what it is, but can you tell the audience your thoughts a little bit on that?
I would say that the full moon phase is prevalent in a number of animals and is prevalent in lots of different activity for a number of animals. And the thing about the full moon phase, it's kind of a 24-hour period. It's
right,
if we're talking about some of the waxing phases, they can go on for 4 or 5 days. The full moon phase is a singular rotation, but yet it gives us a lot of data and a lot of reports from that single moon phase. And so that for me would be the biggest jump out overall of individual phases for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to another question here. And this actually comes from my co-host Gunnar Monson of Monster X Radio. And of course, Gunnar's out of Oregon, and so he's interested in the numbers in Oregon. So Gunnar asks, in Oregon, at what altitude slash elevation are the greatest number of Sasquatch sightings reported?
Yeah, well, firstly, I'm really unhappy that I didn't meet Gunnar this weekend. I was looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah, you know, he was at home under the weather.
I wanted to take back some coffee to the UK and be his sales guy. But
he lost some sales there. Big missed opportunity.
International salesman. Yeah. Took the coffee company to a different level.
The NFL.
There we go. Yeah, so where the Pacific Northwest is concerned and where Washington State and Oregon is concerned, these are such huge areas for this subject as anyone who even has a remote interest in it would know. What we decided to do with the database, because of the geographical differences within these states and the different geographical zones, mm-hmm. you know, Eastern Washington can look more reminiscent of Southern California at times than a rainforest. Yeah. You know? So we subdivide areas. We subdivided Oregon into the mountain ranges that we have. So we've subdivided the coastal range, which you guys are familiar with and done previous research on. We have our own set of numbers, even though collectively we have the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
And we can collectively put all the numbers together. The subdivides are the coastal range, which is a mountain range that runs parallel to the ocean, the Pacific Ocean there. And we have the Cascades Range, which come down from Canada and go as far south as Northern California. So we can split the numbers up in with the potential of maybe comparing numbers of potentially different population pockets of these animals, which is what we feel could be beneficial. So both ranges have different elevations and different topography. But to go back to Gunnar's question, what we'll do with this question, we will, as you guys are listening to this now, you could look on our Facebook page and we've done two graphs, which the reason why we've done the graph is you can visually see the differences in the average elevations as opposed to just listening to me give numbers out verbally.
Well, we're visual creatures, right? I mean, it's very important. Yeah.
Definitely. And we get more benefits from visualization than we do from just our ears. But I will read it out on air also. The Oregon coast, the coastal range between 0 and 999 feet. So anywhere under 1,000 foot for all reports is at 56%, which is quite a high number.
Huge.
You know, again, perception versus reality. We would look at Sasquatches living up in the mountains. You know, that is a... That's the kind of romantic side that we've got maybe in our head for many, you know.
Right.
But 56% of all coastal range reports are under 1,000 feet. From 1,000 to 2,000, we are at 32%. So if we just, even if we combine that number there, we're at 88% of coastal range reports under 2,000 foot, which is pretty cool. Above 2,000 foot, we have, you know, a total of 12% of reports in the coastal range of Oregon that are above 2,000 feet. You know, again, perception against reality.
Right.
Who's to say, you know, there are still encounters above 2,000 feet. There are still encounters above 5,000 feet. But 88% of all of our coastal range reports are under 2,000 feet. Where visual sightings are concerned in the Oregon coastal range, numbers are very, very similar. Only 6% of all visual encounters or reports on the Oregon coastal range are above 2,000 foot in elevation. Incredible amount. So we're at 94% of reports that are under 2,000 foot for visualizations, for actual visual sightings of these creatures in the Oregon coastal range. Looking at the Cascades, which is a little further inland, but would run from the Columbia River and Mount Hood down to the Californian border, and the mountain range runs all the way down. Overall, the reports under 1,000 foot are at 23%. So that's a considerable difference for what they are on the coast. Over 2,000 foot in elevation, 59%. So we've gone from 12% of reports in the coastal range that are over 2,000 foot in elevation to 59% of reports in the Cascade Mountain range to being over 2,000 foot in elevation. Again, where just visual sightings are concerned, we again see a high number. We're at 52% of all Cascade reports being above 2,000 foot in elevation. So, again, I'll just go back. Verbally listen to this. If you haven't got a pen and paper right now, everything I've said is rubbish, because it's going to go in through one ear and go out the other. So please look at the Facebook page, look at the graphs, and that will give you a much better representation of what I've just said there.
Fantastic numbers. And, you know, obviously it takes a Sasquatch and a person, you know, especially when it comes to the visuals, obviously, right? The elevation, it's really intriguing. Looking at those numbers, you know, and I've looked at them before, and, you know, you got to figure where are people living, you know, and on the coastal range, it's, you know, especially up here in the Pacific Northwest, you know, where I live, I'm fairly close to the coast. And then as you move inland, you know, the numbers, you know, peak up.
Yeah.
But so does the elevation, right?
Yes,
so,
of course.
Yeah. So all that plays a part.
I've never really been down and paid much attention to the coastal range in Oregon. And I don't really, I'll be honest, I don't know the topography. I don't know the local area very well at all, but again, just going by the numbers, that's where we're at. What I will say, Shane, is that even from those numbers specifically, we've always got the ability to go in and subdivide that and delve into it even further seasonally, for example. So, you know, do the winter reports look different compared to the summer reports in that mountain range? You know, we have the ability to do so much.
You've done it for me. So much. Yeah, you've done it for me.
So thank you for that question, Gunnar. But even with those basic numbers that we've shared on the Squatchometrics Facebook page, we can still go into it even more and dig deep down and maybe find some real, real cool correlations.
Well, it's endless, because your database is ever growing. I mean, it's not stagnant. It's ever growing. And so that's how you build up patterns of trends. It doesn't end.
We won't finish it.
Never.
You know? That's a scary thought, because we've put some serious hours already into it. You know, I mean, maybe 12 years now. I think we're at 12 years.
Insanity.
That's a lot of hours. That's a lot of manpower, you know. But I'm only 41 years of age, so I've still got some gas in the tank.
41, you know? you look 20.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
So we've still got a long way to go, but this will never finish. You know, every day these public databases put new sightings on, and then we have to manually put it in to the database. So the numbers are changing regularly.
All right. So we got another question from Rose Creek Retreat via Instagram.
Yeah.
Contacting you on Instagram there, Bobby. What do you think of the idea that Sasquatches deliberately show themselves as a form of intimidation, pushing us indoors during the magical hour, air quotes there, in order to ensure privacy during hunts? Your thoughts on that? What's the data say? Do you have any data?
It's tough to grab data for something so specific like that, and that's more opinion as opposed to data. You know.
Well, we kind of discussed this earlier. Yeah. Subjective.
Yeah, very subjective. I think it makes sense. I can't really back that up with data, as I'm sure everyone can understand. But yeah, it makes sense to me. You know, I don't think they would want humans running around the woods if they're being, you know, real serious in food gathering. You know, no, I truly don't.
I know that you have some data. I'm not sure if you have it available or not, but one thing that I've noticed over the years in some of your data that I found really intriguing was during the winter time, the number of reports around homesteads. I think it kind of stands to reason. A lot of it kind of makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And more so in the northern states, Shane, where it does get cold in the winter. Unfortunately, don't have that data for hand.
Oh, no, that's fine. I
can't pull it.
I'll surprise you there.
Seconds, unfortunately.
But the data does show that there's... It does make a lot of sense less people out in the woods.
Absolutely.
More people at home, especially in those gnarly areas.
Absolutely. And parts of, you know, even parts of the certain counties in the Olympic Peninsula, the reports, the winter reports from homesteads is off the scale. Not huge data set, but certainly enough for us to pull that would at least give us the, you know, interesting mark at the end of it, you know, than anything definitive again. But yeah, northern states, cold states, winter time, homesteads, that's rock and roll.
Okay, hopefully I pronounced this right, but James Scalise, is that how you would pronounce that?
Looks to me.
Scalise. Yeah, Scalise.
I hope that's right. I hope apologies that, if it's not.
Likewise. Via Instagram, question posed to Squatch Metrics again. And this is something, this is a great question. Great question. This is data that's really stuck out to me personally. James asks, what is the magic hour?
Yeah, well, the magical hour is something that we've just, you know, in the last 6 months, we've found some real interesting numbers on the hour between 11 p.m. Up until midnight. And we've found a lot of different search parameters that I've just personally been looking at and ignoring the time of day on. This hour is becoming incredibly prominent, and it was too prominent to keep on ignoring. So we decided to look into it and really compare some geographical areas on it. And we've came up with some pretty, I say, interesting numbers there. We don't know why this is, so we can debate what the whys, you know, until the cows come home. All I can say is that this hour between 11 p.m. and midnight is really, really prominent in a lot of different geographical areas. You know, the Washington Cascades, if we was to look at non-visual reports from over, I think we're at over 200 reports.
Mm-hmm.
Our magical hour comes through. If you want, I'm just going to run through some areas and some search parameters that will pop up with this magical hour of 11 p.m. to midnight. Okay, so I'll just give some examples of this magical hour between 11 p.m. and midnight. In the Pacific Northwest and the states of Washington, Oregon, Northern California, Montana, Idaho, and British Columbia, most common time for a driver to have a sighting would fall in our magical hour. That's over 500 reports.
Wow.
In the Washington Cascades region, again, a region that we've subdivided from the total amount of Washington reports. From non-visual reports, our magical hour shines through. Of 159 sightings, our magical hour between 11 p.m. and midnight comes through. Vocalization reports, magical hour comes through. Overall reports for the entire Washington Cascades, again, 11 p.m. till midnight. And they are strong numbers, because we're talking over, where are we at? Over 350 to maybe 400 reports there in the Oregon Cascades. Mm. So for that hour, that specific hour to come through on regular sets of different sets of data, that's really intriguing. But again, we haven't gone through the seasonal variables here. This doesn't necessarily mean that these numbers hold for winter, spring, summer, and the fall, you know, so maybe we will see variance there, which I'm sure we will. In fact, where else have we got? We've got Washington statewide. The time frame comes through, the hour comes through again on non-visual reports, on vocalization reports, and on overall reports. Oregon Cascades are the same mountain range, but just further south. Again, all through the non-visual reports, the time frame comes through. The vocalization reports, the time frame comes through, and for all Oregon Cascades reports overall. So that's pretty interesting there.
Very.
Other parts of the country, we recently done a post on Alabama, and up popped our magical hour again. Which is Alabama, what, 2,000 miles south maybe from here, which is interesting. But again, the magical hour of 11 p.m. till midnight came through. Yeah, so I could go on and on with this magical hour, but it seems that it's an hour of the day where Sasquatches, for whatever reason, appear to be moving, or certainly vocalizing as well. You know, even if there isn't a visual sighting, the vocalization reports are incredibly prominent at this hour.
It's just an incredible piece of data to me.
We absolutely need to look more into it.
There's something to it. There's a lot of meat there.
There's a lot of meat. I don't believe we've scratched the surface anywhere near with that, because we've got, you know, 50 states or 49 states, to Hawaii aside, to look into and to compare. Then we've got the breakdown seasonally. You know, is this mainly a summer hour where we're talking of daylight hours kind of diminishing at what, 10 o'clock in the evening?
Yeah,
the north maybe.
And what's the activity behind what's the human doing? Are they camping? Yeah,
there we go.
I mean, that's incredible.
So again, we've got the possibility to really dig deep into that, which will be cool. But we will dig deep into it, and we will share it in due time.
Oh, fantastic! Well, so that's a piece of data that magic hour.
Yeah, that again, listening to this verbally, we just don't get the benefits from it. We truly don't. So again, visit the Facebook page. I will do a post. I will do some visualizations with this data, and it will be on the Facebook page right now. So when you finish this show, or if you want to pause this show or whatever, go to the Facebook page, visualize what we're saying now, and then you'll get a better idea of the power of that data.
Visualize it, write it down, take a screenshot. Yeah. If you're an investigator, researcher, enthusiast, put it in your back pocket, look at it. And then maybe something will stick out to you. Maybe it'll help you within your endeavors. I think that's important.
Definitely.
All right. We have probably our last question this time around, but it comes from Jamie Jenny from Pennsylvania and Ohio Bigfoot Research. Okay. And of course, this question was posted or shared with you on Instagram there, Bobby. Question is, people assume a lot about Sasquatch, but how much do people think they know about us? And do you think they come into populated areas to observe our behavior? How often are they observed close to human areas or habitat?
Well, you know, I don't know how much they know about us. I do think they come into populated areas to view us. I do think they're a very inquisitive animal. I truly do. How often are they observed close to human areas? Well, we've got reports from some of the biggest cities in the US and the counties that they fall into, you know, and King County, in which Seattle sits in. Seattle, we're talking over 2 million of population now, right? Including the suburbs like the metropolis.
And growing.
Yeah. We've got 41 reports in that county alone. And I know parts of that county do get incredibly wild.
Oh, incredibly, yeah.
To have Sasquatches in that general vicinity, the probability surely would be that they do encroach on human habitat at one time or another. And I don't know. I'd assume that their inquisitiveness does take them real close to us, without us even knowing, you know.
More times than not, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a total of 1,236 reports from witnesses that are just doing normal activities at home. So that's not even stepping into a forest. That's not opening the door of their car. That's just being at home with the ability to have a Sasquatch encounter. You know, beyond that, around about 25% of those describe peeking or watching of the subject, the target species. You know, so yeah, that does that points to inquisitiveness. It points to them coming in and being nosy around us, which is quite incredible. But aside from Seattle, I mean, I know I've spent quite a lot of time in Chicago and Cook County, where the city falls in, and there's reports from Cook County, Chicago, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Cook County, Illinois. There was a recent one, or I say recent, maybe within the last 10 years, of a road crossing at Brookfield Zoo, which is in the suburbs. And I've been to the zoo, and there is forest around there, and there's a ton of waterways. But, you know, is it enough habitat to for a Sasquatches to be in? I don't know the answer to that. I can only look at the reports and say, well, that's what we've got. Pittsburgh is another city in Pennsylvania, Allegheny County, which I believe Jamie and Jenny are from that part of the world, or at least state-wise anyway. Another US city with over 1 million people. And we've got close to 50 reports from that county alone in Western Ohio. Is it Southwestern Ohio, maybe? Pittsburgh, yeah, possibly.
I believe so.
But yeah, again, hugely forested area. Big US metropolis there. Ton of people, over 1 million people. And we're looking at a number of Sasquatch reports, which is quite incredible.
Thanks for the questions, by the way, everybody. Thank you for the questions. Hopefully you'll get something out of them. Hopefully got something out of, got an answer or two out of it. But I know within myself, within my research, within the Lent Project and other organizations and individuals that I talk with and speak with, the data has been huge, huge. I know I've been at a few summits and symposiums speaking, you know, have a witness come at me to share their encounter. And literally I've been able to give off a time, you know, your encounter did include, it was a, you know, roadside crossing. Yes. Yeah. How'd you know? Was it around such and such a time?
Yeah.
I could guess that based on your data. Yeah. I mean, just based on,
that's cool. Huh?
In specific areas, you know,
if
stand
we're
up.
Establishing predictability, Shane, we're doing something right.
You're doing something right.
If we can predict that, then good.
It's profound. And I get, going forward, I'm really excited about some of the things working on when it comes to waterways and ridges and yeah, all that stuff. You're working on some really, really neat stuff. There's some things that are going to be coming down the road here, I'm sure, hopefully, more and more publicly. I know you're working on a lot of things.
Everything we do, I'll eventually share it publicly.
I think
if I didn't, then something's badly wrong.
Especially you being in England, what are you going to do?
Nothing. With those, nothing. It would just be a pure waste of time because I'm not doing anything with this data. And like I said earlier on, if this can help anybody, absolutely anybody out there, get an encounter, then that's happy days as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I will say that, you know, without putting a dampener on things, I am so heavily weighted on visualization that coming onto a radio show, I've never done this kind of thing in my life before, you know, and thanks for being so... so welcoming, and I am pretty nervous, have been pretty nervous for sure. But the visualization side of it, please, guys, you know, don't just listen to what I'm saying. Look at the social media pages and please actually visualize what I'm saying as opposed to what I'm verbally saying, because you just simply do not get the benefits out of listening to what I say and some of the nonsense I will personally come up with as opposed to what the data is saying and how that can be presented visually, albeit in charts, in graphs, in mapping, which we're going to take. We're definitely taking mapping to a new level this year. I know where we're going with that. I'm really excited about that. So all fingers onwards and upwards, and fingers crossed we go into the future real positive and we have a more productive year than last year.
Well, that's definitely no doubt going to happen. Anybody listening to the show out there, if you have questions, I know Bobby's a busy guy, but look out Squatch Metrics on Facebook, look him out on Instagram. You got specific questions or even ideas. Hey, jump on, give them a shout.
And you know what? Even criticism, so long as it's constructive criticism, I'm 100% open to it.
Yeah, don't bag on him because he's English.
No, come on. That's a low blow. No, but anything at all, if you're a serious researcher and you genuinely believe that I could help, I'll sit there all day and all night trying my best to help you. I genuinely will. Yeah. So feel free to come forward.
I know you're up here for a few more days. You're going to head out and do some exploring.
Yeah, I've got some me time coming up.
Well deserved.
Just purely relaxing and just getting some fresh air. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go into the Olympics, and I've found myself a beautiful lodge by a lake, and I've got 3 books with me, and I've got maybe a bottle of red wine coming my way or two. You know, and just to have some me time and some downtime and relax and recharge, and then fly back to London on Wednesday.
Good stuff. Well, once again, Bobby, thank you for jumping on the show here. Safe travels. It's been a pleasure having you back over, and hopefully we can do this again.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully. Thank you very much, man.
And that wraps up another episode of Monster X Radio. Be sure to check out Squatch Metrics on Facebook as well as Instagram. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Take care.
Thank you for joining Monster X Radio.